Yes, we're the survivors. When the organizers asked me to give some sort of wrap-up talks at the end of this, this workshop, I perhaps foolishly said, well, okay, without having a clue what I'd say. I guess you're supposed to say either something that's humorous or provocative or offensive, something to wake people up. Perhaps. What can I say? We have listened to an awful lot of talks, which I think have been very interesting, that have shown really remarkable progress in a lot of different areas. That's sort of the number one impression that I got from sitting through talks in the last few days. I want to talk about some of the things which made an impression on me, but I have to make very clear, it's not like I'm going to try and give some completely balanced summary of everything that was presented. It's obviously, you know, personal take. Before I talk, though, I guess I have to comment. I look at the title when I was writing this and saw Exotic States. Of course, many of the talks have been inspired, at least, by QCD, A Theory of Quarks and Gluons. And what are exotic states? Isn't a state where you actually see quarks and gluons running around doing something about as unexotic as you can get? I mean, surely it's really confinement that's the exotic state of QCD.
Genetics.
Right. Okay, so glossing over that I've never really been clear on the subject of this workshop, certainly many talks were inspired by heavy ion collisions, including much of my own recent work. And what can you say about heavy ion collisions? They're hard. They're really, really hard. Nevertheless, I think it's remarkable that over the last several years, a pretty compelling story has emerged. There's actually a lot more that makes sense than perhaps some people might have anticipated a dozen or more years ago. So, you know, we've all heard about perfect fluids and seen in the very first talk of this workshop a nice summary of how well perfect fluid hydrodynamics does at describing data, but there are clearly corrections to that. There's been remarkable progress on trying to get a handle on viscous corrections, on doing a better job of the complicated hadronic part of the collision, doing a better job of initial conditions. This is going to be an ongoing story, and it's going to remain a really, really hard problem. Nevertheless, certainly the qualitative sort of big picture message from heavy ion collisions that you produce quark gluon plasma, and that it is not a weakly interacting gas, that's surely a robust result that is going to be with us for a long time, and it certainly qualifies as an important discovery. Personally, I think it was a little bizarre to hear that touted as, oh, everyone expected that it would be weakly interacting, and it's such a surprise that it's strongly interacting. I don't know, that's some revisionist history. At temperatures of 2 times TC, 1.5 times TC, I don't know anyone. Well, that's too strong. sensible people realize that it couldn't be truly weakly interacting all the way down to 1.5.
How many sensible people was around you?
We'll discuss that over a drink. Okay. In terms of other things we've heard this week, there have been a handful of talks on results from lattice theory. And I actually think it's an important part of judging progress obtained by any one set of techniques is understanding what you can do with different techniques, because that sets the standard for, you know, what's good results, what's precision. The lattice theory, lattice gauge theory, has been with us for a long time. It continues to make progress. And this week, what did I learn? Well, I certainly saw compelling evidence of the scientific value of video games from Zoltan Fodor. Being a little bit more serious, having been a real skeptic of the ability of extracting spectral densities and real-time information from Euclidean correlators, it's nice to see that at least real progress is being made. It's always going to be really tough, but perhaps not quite as hopeless as I once thought. But I do just want to sort of, you know, put some real emphasis on what I think is one of the cleanest and nicest messages from portions of recent lattice gauge theory work, which is large NC is a good approximation. 3 really is close to infinity. This may be a slight oversimplification, but in large measure, that's the message that Mike Tepper gave us. Okay. A large fraction of what we've heard this week has been work that is using ADS-CFT duality to try and address physics that's at least inspired by QCD and heavy ion collisions in particular. What should one say about it? Well, it's not a big point, but first of all, I have to say ADS-CFT is really a horrible name. Much of the work is not actually in ADS space. It may be asymptotically ADS, but much of the physics is tied up with the fact that it's not actually ADS space. That's true of anything that has to do with thermal physics. And the theories we're trying to understand are generally not conformal field theories. And of course, the underlying duality is not just a duality between strings in ADS space and CFT. So a much better name really is gauge string duality, and I encourage people to use that. Perhaps an even better name is simply applied string theory. And that's a fine name, too. If you wish, but. What can I say? We've heard a whole slew of talks that all have very strong common threads that have shown nice progress in a lot of different areas. One of the ways that it caught my attention was just the number of string theory talks that are showing plots that come from real calculations, not just some little hand-drawn sketch. That's really changed if you think about this workshop to ones a handful of years ago.
So Kapoor doesn't qualify because he showed the handwriting.
Patience. Yes, we'll come back to that. So almost every talk ends with the statement, there's much more to do, here are some of the things. In my talk, I didn't really have much time to talk about it. I won't really talk about it here, but I figured I'd put up a few things that I hope to see progress on that have to do with applied string theory in the next few years. I was very happy to see real progress and hear about some real progress on results for more QCD-like theories for quantities that probe real-time dynamics, like energy loss, doing all the things that we heard about from heavy mesons, energy loss, jet quenching, you name it. It would be really valuable to now build up information about what are the results in the whole list of theories for which we have gravitational duals. And that'll take time and it'll take work, and in many cases you don't know the bulk geometry analytically, so it'll take the level of numerical work that was described in several talks, but I hope we'll see real progress there. Many of the results we've heard about are all in this limit where the Itauf coupling lambda goes to infinity. That's clearly an idealization. just as when you do weak coupling calculations, you really want to know how do things change as you turn up the coupling. When you do strong coupling calculations, you'd really like to know how things change as you turn down the coupling. And subleading corrections to the lambda equals infinity limit are known for thermal observables in this class of physics for just a few things, the entropy, the shear viscosity, that's just about it. It would clearly be very helpful to get 1 over lambda corrections for more quantities. It's always fair to say all of this work that's looking at the wrong theory, what does it teach us about real QCD? And there's a lot that can be said about it. I just wanted to point out one thing here which I think hasn't been appreciated enough. So several talks, and I'm presuming most everyone here has seen pictures of the pressure over the Stefan-Boltzmann pressure in QCD. And above the deconfinement transition, it's relatively flat, roughly at 3/4, and only goes up to approach the Stefan-Boltzmann limit very, very slowly. And that's received a lot of attention. But something that I think is as, or perhaps even more important, is the behavior of observables like screening masses, correlation lengths in different channels in thermal QCD. And here's some results from Dada and Gupta of a handful of years ago. I'm just plotting their results for two different symmetry channels. The only point I want to make is these are screening masses measured in units of the temperature. Here's the transition temperature. And what do you see? You see there's real structure near the transition temperature, and then it's essentially flat. And it's basically flat from 1.5 TC to 4 TC. That's really good news for an optimistic hope that a theory like N equals 4, which is a conformal field theory, could reproduce interesting physics in this region, because that's exactly what any conformal theory predicts, that masses are just proportional to temperature because that's the only scale, so presented this way would be dead flat. Clearly, if you're too close to TC, forget it. So I think of this as the domain of Ed Shuryak. He's the one who's willing to think about incredibly complicated dynamics there and weird bound states and all kinds of things which I can't get my head around. I'm hopeful that we can really make some progress about what's going on in this regime.
But Larry, how do you know that this is not just some conspiracy of logarithmic corrections and perturbation theory of the couplings, you know, canceling each other sort of to make it flat for a while?
How do I know it's not a conspiracy? I don't know. How do you know that anything is not a conspiracy? Either you're a believer in conspiracies or you're not.
So it's down to a question of faith, right?
But typically, conspiracy is not. Let me give you an example from a factor. Why does it from a factor? At the same time, it's 1 over 2 squared, large 2 squared. And there's no way it's going to be the same at 2 squared close to 0, but nevertheless, it's exactly goes as justice.
See, but there too,
because of conspiracy and conspirations.
What can I say? It could be. I mean, if you go farther here, you see real structure. The things change as you go to higher temperature. There's clearly a weak coupling regime. In this particular example, I think it's clear that that doesn't really capture what's going on here. But ultimately, I mean, this is something that needs more consideration. Ultimately, you want to see a lot of different observables. Any attempt to learn about one theory, QCD, by studying some different theory is sure not to have some universal validity. It's going to work better for some questions than for others. And so at best, you say you'd like to learn what are good questions.
But
to make this
in this particular plot, where you think Larry would be perturbation series starting? At which T you would think that it is weak interaction?
The perturbative expansion of, say, the Debye mass is well behaved when you're a little bit farther to the right than I've plotted here, about 10,000. But of course, I mean, even answering that question, you've got to say, what are your standards for work well? And it requires a more nuanced discussion. But if you say something like, where is the second term smaller than the first term, it's way out there.
What does it depend on chess and logics in this case?
Ultimately, these curves come down because ultimately these screening masses behave like GT. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, T divided by log of T, if you want to phrase it.
You expect this to happen somewhere very, very far.
Way out there. Right. But the message is here that looks flat. As long as you stay away, as long as you don't go below about 1.5 T. So.
You said it yourself, right? So it's 1 over square root of a log. It's already a very slow function, even per term.
Well, they're coefficients, sure. Okay. I'd be happy to talk about that some more. I can probably outlast many of you, but let me not try to do that. I mean, we already have jazz going on out there. I can't possibly try and summarize everything that we heard, even in the talks related to gauge string duality applications to heavy ion collisions. However, I snitched from Steve Gripser his nice little summary table. And I just think it's sort of a nice way of putting up in one slide a lot of different pieces of interesting work that have all come together in recent years. And it really is sort of a dramatic change. I'm really not going to say anything more about that, other than to say I think it's terrific. Stepping back, a very large number of the talks we've heard here, I really think of in the context of sort of a broader picture that I've tried to sketch here, which I've titled with a phrase that I heard from Derek Tini earlier this week, which it really captures the way I think about this as well. Namely, as theorists, we're almost never able to do a calculation that is directly giving us a great treatment in some experimentally accessible system. We're always idealizing, and then we are always attempting to extrapolate to reality. And there's, of course, a very long history of that in QCD using weak coupling methods, and in a thermal context, that means working at very, very high temperature, and then attempting to extrapolate to the right. Tony gave us a nice summary of how well that can work if you do pretty sophisticated attempts to resum, and if you look at thermodynamic quantities. I want to give a bit of a reality check of how poor this works if you ask about questions that really probe real-time dynamics. That is, if you ask about things like viscosities or diffusion constants or energy loss rates, these are things for which just doing the leading order weak coupling calculation is quite hard. And with one very recent exception that has to do with a very bold student of Guy Moore, there is no, well, except for one exception, we don't even know how to do subleading corrections. What you can do is you can estimate the size of subleading corrections in order to say how big you think the error bars are on your leading order weak coupling result, which is part of trying to guess how far can you extrapolate in temperature down toward temperatures that are relevant at experiment. And that comparison is not pretty. You clearly have 100% uncertainties from higher order effects that we know they're there at values of the temperature that correspond to temperatures that are still well above what we see at REC. So, like it or not, weak coupling methods, if you ask for dynamic quantities, are very problematic. I wish it was otherwise, because I spent a lot of time working on some of these calculations. But that's important because that sets the standard for what's a useful alternative approach. If weak coupling methods worked great, we wouldn't need alternative approaches. Right? So obviously, we've heard a lot of talks which are all about progress over here. Change the theory from QCD to something like maximally supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory. And it has to be emphasized, change the strength of the interaction from some order one value, which is surely the right answer for the quark gluon plasma produced at RIC. It is not infinitely strongly interacting. It's just not weakly interacting. It's in some difficult intermediate regime. But instead, what we have progress is out here over at strong coupling. So obviously, what we'd like to do is learn how to do this extrapolation as well as we can. And that's also going to be hard. But we can learn quite a bit by making comparisons between weak and strong coupling in the same theory. We can try and separate sensitivity to the constituents of the theory, separate that from sensitivity to the interaction strength by making comparisons this way. And of course, it'll be helpful to simply fill in results on additional theories that aren't QCD and aren't N equals 4 super Yang-Mills, but in some sense are in between. And that's part of what I hope to see in the future. Okay. We've heard a variety of other things about which I don't have anything terribly profound to say. Very dense cold matter has been an interesting topic for many years. The realization that there is surely a colored superconducting phase at sufficiently high density has stimulated a huge amount of work in, I don't know how long it's been, the last decade or so. It does seem like there's no end to subtleties. That phase diagram just keeps getting more and more complicated. We desperately need some reality checks. We might eventually get that from neutron stars. I hope so. We heard a few interesting talks on cosmological applications, also something where we'll have a lot more data coming in future years. We've heard some interesting talks on applications of similar theoretical techniques to condensed matter physics, and I think that'll be an interesting thing which I won't be surprised to see a lot more on in the next few years. So that's about it for my attempt to try and distill a few messages from what I've listened to in the last few days. I think it's been a very delightful meeting. I certainly want to give my thanks to the organizers and to the Perimeter Institute for bringing us all together.